Today is the day to wake, work, and win. Welcome to The Standard. Lost in a warehouse with zero visibility, 500-pound bales of cotton collapsing on you, your partner runs out of air, then you run out of air. This is the experience of Lieutenant Philip Grandin of Lubbock Fire Rescue, who, with the help of a prepared writ on the outside, was able to survive a May Day event in February 2018. So, Phil, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
So, first off, you're an engine company lieutenant or truck company lieutenant?
An engine.
And were you first due on this?
Kind of. We actually had another warehouse fire going on at the same time that was somewhat in control. So there was just one engine there watching it. And then they actually, just a couple blocks down, came to this one. And then we got there. But they weren't there as a unit to, you know, go interior or anything. They just kind of told us what was going on. And then they went back to their fire. So we were pretty much the first ones on scene to get things going.
So this is a fire in a warehouse that started in the middle of the night. Can you just take us through your response and what happened?
So we get the call, and I knew that from the address it was another warehouse fire. This would have been our fifth warehouse fire in 2 months. So it's just kind of this ongoing thing where, you know, man, another warehouse fire, because these incidents go on for a long time. It's not like you just go there, put the fire out, and then go back to station and chill out. I mean, these are very long, drawn out. One warehouse can take a week because there's thousands of cotton bales in these warehouses. And so we go to this particular one, and it was a little different because this structure was sprinkled. And so it was keeping the fire from getting out of control. And so we did my size up with the other lieutenant that was there, and we were able to tell that part of the warehouse, because it was a metal building, about 360 feet by 100 feet, roughly the size of a football field. And so we scanned it with our thermal imagers and could tell that part of it was hotter than the rest of it, about, you know, 30 degrees hotter. You could tell just one section roughly in the middle of the building. So we basically knew where the fire was from that. We didn't know exactly, but it was generally in this area. So command, when they got there, they assigned us to go inside as a scout team on the side of it. So we go in with the in line, and the first thing I noticed that when we go in there, there's not a whole lot of heat, but the place is full of just the thickest light gray smoke that you can't even see your hand in your face hardly. So try to go underneath it, get low, and it's pushed all the way to the concrete. So we can't get under it, can't see anything. And so I pull out my thermal, and when I'm looking at my thermal, I can't see anything with the thermal either, because there's just not enough heat in this smoke. So it's just like fog. So I told my hoseman, you know, let's stay on the hose line. Don't get off the hose line. This is our only way to get out of this place. We just go to take a left-hand search because that's where the direction of the fire was. And we basically came up on another stack of cotton bales because they stack these things, you know, 10 to 20 feet high. And so it's kind of like a wall. So we just go along the bales. There's no heat, not feeling anything, not seeing anything with the thermal. And after searching in this general area for a while, we kind of came into a horseshoe where the bales were just closing us off. So we backed back out. We were kind of getting low on air at this point. So went outside, regrouped, talked to one of the workers that knew how the building was laid out. And he said there was a lane in the middle of the building that was open for forklifts to drive up and down. So if we just went forward a little bit and then turned left, we should be able to go to where the fire was. So this time I have two firefighters with me. We go straight, and then we come upon a forklift that was parked. So then we'd make a tell one of my hosemen to stay at the forklift so he can feed his hose around that sharp corner. And so he stays there. My other firefighter and I go down probably about 100 feet. And then I finally see something on my thermal. I can see some heat signatures. And what I basically see is some piles of cotton that are smoldering right in front of me to my right and to my left. It's all in front of me. So where we are, I look around with the thermal to make sure we're in a safe spot. I'm looking up, I'm looking behind me, to my sides, just because I know kind of what's in these buildings when there's no smoke in them. So I know, you know, there's stacks of cotton all around us, but where I am, I think I'm safe because what I see is in front of me is where the fire is. I can't see anything with my thermal behind me to my side. So I'm like, okay, we're good. The fire is probably 20 feet in front of us, maybe a little further, not any heat. So like I said, this was the fifth warehouse fire we'd have been on. This is not like, just something that I was all excited to get into. I was trying to take my time with it. All these fires kind of acted different. You know, I'd seen a lot of water running through these places and the cotton just doesn't really absorb it. So I wasn't worried about the water weight. We weren't directly under the sprinklers that I could tell. I couldn't really feel the water. I could hear it, but I couldn't see it. So in my mind, I'm thinking we're good. I'll kind of back up and say that this is probably where I made a mistake is command assigned me to be a scout team. At this point, I had found the fire. I'd found the problem. I'd found where it was. With the limited visibility that we had, hindsight being 20/20, I should have backed out. And, this is where it is, and then went from there. Instead, I was like, here we are. We got the hose line. Let's put some water on it. So, just that firefighter instinct in me wanting to fix the problem. Let's do it. We're here. Might as well. So we start putting water on it. I'm using the thermal to direct the stream because you can't see still. I mean, it's zero visibility. I probably have maybe 4 feet visibility with the thermal without heat. So I can at least see the hose line on the ground, if I look straight down. But so at this point, though, I can see the fire. There's enough heat that I can see our stream hitting the piles of cotton that are smoldering. So, yeah, we're just working. Several minutes pass by. And my hoseman says he's getting low on air. So I tell him, okay, I'll take the hose for a minute and I'll put some more water on it and then we'll go. So my thinking was, it's not going to be hard to get out of here. We just took one turn after we came in. So just a straight back shot and then one turn. I take the hose line and I start spraying. Well, about 10 seconds after I start spraying, I feel this huge jolt on the hose line. It just kind of threw me forward or backwards. I can't really remember. I just remember it whipped me pretty good. And then the next thing I notice is a bell falls and hits me right on my right side, on my feet. And I see the embers fly up from it. And so my first thought is my firefighter behind me. I thought he got crushed because of the way that bell fell. Luckily, I found out he was okay real quick, but that was just a real unsettling feeling. Once I knew he was okay, I said, we're in a terrible spot because I couldn't tell that there was no heat around me or the bells were smoldering above me, but they were. And so just a total false sense of security. So I told him, we got to get the hell out of here. So I still had the hand line in my hand. So I just start to follow it back. And about 6 feet is a bell on top of the hose line. So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe it's just one bell. And so I try to get over that bell. And then I find another one. And so I say, okay, maybe it's just two. So I keep going. And then the more I keep climbing up, I'm starting to climb up. And so at this point, I know that we're cut off pretty bad. And I climb back down. I tell my firefighter, we're trapped. I'm going to call Mayday. So I didn't take too long to call the Mayday because I've always heard, get the Mayday out quick if you find yourself in a bad situation. So I did. I call Mayday, Mayday, Mayday. The cotton's collapsed on our hose line. Follow it in, and we're on the other end of it. I didn't give probably a great Mayday, but I knew we were the only unit inside the building, so I didn't have to get into specifics, but it got out there. So command does his thing on the radio, says we have a Mayday event, and all that goes on out there. They're activating their stuff out there. So at this point, all I'm thinking about is we got to stay calm. I don't want to get too excited because once you lose your wits about yourself is when bad things start to happen. My biggest fear right now is how many more bells are out there that still haven't fallen yet, and can they fall on us? I remember from the size up that there was a roll-up door directly in front of us. I'm not sure how far we were from it, probably 100 feet or so. And if we turn around and go back the other way, I'd already been that way. It was kind of hard to get over all those bells that were piled up. So I was like, well, if we go that way, we might get lost real quick. I said, if we can go straight forward, maybe we can get over this pile of cotton that's already collapsed. Because in my thermal, it didn't look like a whole lot. I don't know if it was the right decision. Probably wasn't. We probably should have tried to go back the way we came. But for whatever reason, I decided to go straight forward. Because to both our sides, we were probably in a small circle of concrete. I don't know how big it was. But we were so close to getting crushed, all sides of us. It was just like I always say, you know, by the grace of God, we got out of this place because we were in a little bubble and we had this protection over us.
Like, approximately how heavy is each bale?
Most of them are 500 pounds. Some are more, just depends on how tightly compressed they are. So the fact we weren't injured, because this bale actually did hit us, you know, that's pretty amazing right there. And so we were both able to move just fine. We start going forward. Getting over these bales is not that easy. They're pretty tall. They're about 3 feet tall. Some of them a little more, about, I don't know, 2 to 3 feet wide by 5 feet long. You know, there's different variations of bales. Some of them were plastic wrapped, higher quality. So they're about 4.5 feet tall. They're a little skinnier, but they're just not, they're not very small, and they're not easy to get around, especially when there's hundreds of them that are all just kind of scattered. You know, they're not stacked up. They've all fallen. And so it's like trying to jump over a bunch of big blocks, and then some of them bust open. So now you have soft cotton. So once we got off the concrete, it didn't take very long for us to quickly lose where we were. Like, I had no idea what direction we were facing. Every time I tried to move a different direction, it was just climbing over bell after bell after bell. And, you know, you're going this direction, that direction, this direction. And I forgot to also mention, I'll back up, that right when I called the mayday, my hoseman's vibe alert started going off. That was another reason why I knew we couldn't stay in the spot that we were very long, because we just didn't have a lot of time, because his air was already getting low. So that was kind of an unsettling feeling, knowing that, well, you know, we don't have much time, because your vibe alert's already going off. We're just in a bad spot. So I try to just lead him around this place so he can kind of conserve his air. So if I go to one spot, can't get through there, because sometimes you jump over a bell and there'd be several stacked on top of each other so tall you couldn't get around the next one. So I was just trying to kind of lead the way, and we got lost real quick. So after several minutes of doing this, you know, the command's trying to ask me how it's going in there. I'm telling him we're trying to find a way out. We're getting low on air. He can't hear me very well. Our radio traffic started getting pretty spotty. Of course, it seems like that always happens whenever a mayday happens or something bad happens. But after a while, my alert starts going off. And that's whenever, you know, you get that unsettling feeling that the clock's ticking and it's going fast. After a few more minutes of that, and just not getting anywhere. I mean, we weren't making any progress. I wasn't finding the concrete. I wasn't finding any intact bale stacks. Because if I just wanted to find one stack of bales that had some concrete on it and was in, you know, intact, because then I had a wall of something that I could follow. Because I knew the way these, like I said, these warehouses were kind of laid out. But I couldn't find that. And zero visibility. The thermals, absolutely no help, because it's just fog. So at this point, I kind of stop what I'm doing and I think, this is it. I'm going to die in this place. And whenever I had those thoughts, I start thinking about my family and just how mad I was that I'm going to die in this place. And just kind of the details of that, like, you just start having all these things run through your mind, and a change starts to happen to you when you let this happen, when you let those thoughts go through your head. I could feel my respirations start to increase more than they already were. My heart rate, I could feel, you know, that increase. And I kind of had this feeling of wanting to give up, because it's just like everything we did, nothing was happening, or we weren't making any progress. When I felt that, though, is kind of the key thing that I want everyone to know, is I was able to recognize that change in my physiology. When I did, I had to basically just squash those thoughts. Like, because thinking that way was starting to, I guess, you know, just make myself freak out, anxiety, I don't know what. But had I let that overtake me, I don't know if we would have had the outcome we would have had, because I probably would have, I mean, there's no telling. I could have gave up. I could have started freaking out and just, I could have left my husband and took off running. I mean, you never know what could happen. Could have breathe so fast, I would have sucked my air down real fast. I mean, there's a lot of variables that could happen. But, you know, with your message, I believe being in great shape and knowing my body allowed me to recognize that I was able to shut out those thoughts and focus on the goal of, I have got to get out of this place. So at this point, I basically say a prayer, you know, just, God, please help me to find a way out. And after that, just that focus, I said, we got to go a different direction. And I don't know if you know Dr. David Griffin of the Charleston
Nine.
Yes. He actually came to Lubbock the day before that to give his speech, or I guess 2 days. So, and I was there, and part of his presentation, he talks about a guy. It wasn't a firefighter. It was actually one of the civilians caught in that building. He was banging on the wall and they cut him out. So for whatever reason, that just popped in my mind. It wasn't my instinct to get on the wall at that point, you know, because I was just looking for a door. So I was like, we have got to get cut out of this place. So I was like, let's just try to find a wall. So I kind of, you know, I thank Dr. David Griffin for coming to Lubbock and putting that little nugget of information in me. So anyway, we changed directions, and my hoseman, he's basically out of air at this point. It didn't take us a whole lot of time to find exactly what we needed to find after we changed directions. I was able to find a little bit of concrete and then some bales that were stacked up, and they were only about to my chest. And I reached over and I felt some more that were stacked up higher than those. So these were kind of stair steps. So I just say, I tell my husband, stay here, I'm going to climb up. So I climb up, and when I get on top of the second stack, it's flat. And I'm like, well, this is you know, pretty good. We can get up here. So I go down and tell him, let's climb up. So he climbs up with me. We climb across a little ways, and finally I see a wall beam. So I know we're on the wall, but I still have no idea where we are in relation to the building. So I'm just like, look, I noticed that there's a little bit of space in between the wall and the bells, about 2 feet. So it's enough for us to get down. So I tell him, we got to jump down. So we do. Once we jump down, I know where the spot we're at. We're stuck by the big wall beams. They won't let us pass through. So we're about in a 6 foot area. But at least we're on the wall. You know, we're stuck here. So we just start banging on the wall. And I radio that we're on the wall. We set off our passes. And at this point, I run out of air. So we're both breathing smoke. And the truck crew found us pretty quick. Didn't take them a whole lot of time. And, you know, 15 degree morning, the rescue saw fired up first try. And they cut us out. It took them... That was some really thick gauge metal in that building. It was built back in the 50s, so they hit it with an axe and barely penetrated it. So they, you know, that saw took a couple minutes for them to cut the hole out. But, I mean, they got us out and just so close, you know. We couldn't have been in there much longer, or the effects of the carbon monoxide would have really started to take over. We would have had a different outcome, most likely.
Yeah, this is a good lesson of why a full cylinder matters, 5,500 PSI matters, that when you check your cylinder in the morning and you're 500 or sometimes even more below that, you know, that's going to be air you may need. I remember sitting in a class with Dave McGrail of Denver Fire years ago, and one of the things he says is, you know, that last 500 PSI is not for you, it's for your family. So it kind of hit home.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And we actually got on a carboxyhemoglobin monitor after we got out of the fire, and my hoseman was at 26% and I was only at 6. But, you know, that just shows you, I think at 30% is whenever the carbon monoxide starts to really take over your cognitive abilities to think, because there's not enough oxygen reaching your brain. So, you know, had we been in there one extra minute, he would have, there's no telling what my hoseman might have experienced. He could have took off running from me, or just lost the ability to really follow me around. So I commend him a lot for staying with me and toughing it out as long as he did, because he was close. Just looking at it, by the grace of God, we got out of there. Everything worked out just right on this one. But, I mean, I do believe preparing for something like this helped also, because there was just a lot of variables. And then I know I also commend the RIT team and the truck crew, because the RIT came in the building, tried to follow our hose line in, and they tried to get over the cotton to get to us, which there was just so much of it, they couldn't reach us. And then the truck crew found us quick. You know, a lot of things went right on this one. Communications were terrible, but, you know, it worked out.
I mean, it just goes to show how important your fitness is, how important you're preparing for days like this when, you know, we have a department that we've never had a on-duty, line-of-duty death, and we have had mayday situations in the past, but it can happen to you and people in your department. It's just not a matter of if, but when.
Definitely. And I mean, there's things that you can't control. I mean, obviously we can't control everything, but being in great shape, you know, that allows you to your heart is used to being in those high elevated situations, and your respirations are increased. So you know what it feels like to be in that. And then in a high stress situation like this, it's going to be even higher than that, but you were able to recognize the changes in your body because you put yourself there over and over and over. So it's no surprise. You know, someone that doesn't work out very often or increases their cardiovascular system or is probably not going to be able to regulate their responses to those stressful situations as well as somebody who is in shape. So, you know, that's just kind of the message that I really want to harp on with all the listeners is it's not so much about being in good shape just to do the job well. It's how long can you survive and how well can you perform in a survival setting like that?
No amount of workouts in your PT gear are going to get you ready for your survival. The only way to do that is to be constantly training in your gear. The only way to get used to, you know, you had mentioned that you knew where you were at physiologically because you had trained for that. That wasn't in PT gear. That wasn't in, you know, jean jackets on the fire ground. That was training in your gear to exhaustion as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, you were used to the toughest environment that right. we operate in.
Yeah, no doubt. And then also mental toughness. I mean, I kind of try to do things that are a little out of the ordinary just to prepare my mindset for stuff like that. Like, you know, I'll work out between midnight and 2 a.m. sometimes, or when it's 100 degrees outside, I'm outside working out. I mean, just little stuff like that, I think, can help you to deal with a situation like this.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's 20 degrees out or 100 degrees out, I think there's value in getting out in your gear and training in those environments when you can.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, just preparation. And the little things that we do are so important. I mean, the fact that saw started up on a 15 degree day in the first few pulls, is just one of those little things that this is why we check our equipment. This is why we start the saws up every shift, because whenever your card gets pulled and you're relying on that one thing, it better be ready to go, because if it's not, and whose fault is it? You know, do you want to live with that you just, it's no big deal. No, it is a big deal. This is a serious job, and we don't need to lose the seriousness of it because maybe something bad hasn't happened in a while. Maybe we haven't got to use our skills. I mean, whatever it is, just every shift, you know, think how serious this job is. Who's relying on you? Whose family is relying on you? Go out there and perform at the best of your abilities. So, that's my message.